Caught in the dark with a radio spark. Meet me where the most light falls. You are listening to Where the Most Light Falls with DJ Tamara on Spirit Plants Radio, broadcasting around the world at spiritplantsradio.com. Turn on, tune in, and visit us on the web at spiritplantsradio.com for schedules, playlists, archives, and more. Welcome to Where the Most Light Falls. On today's show, I'll be featuring poetry accompanied by the music of Ludovico Einaudi. The album is called L'Onde, which means the wave, and it is loosely based on a novel by the same name. I read recently that Greenpeace was able to get Einaudi to play piano on a specially built iceberg near a crumbling glacier for dramatic impact. That alone made me want to choose this album, but the music is also quite beautiful and stirring. I'll get that started for you. Einaudi is known as a minimalist in his style of piano composition. I find it very relaxing and good for reading poetry. The last time we met, I described my wish to celebrate poets that may not be as widely read as some others. I'm calling this ongoing project the Lesser Known Poets Project, and it will be my pleasure to introduce you to some of those poets today. In addition, I'll offer you the opportunity to participate in a writing activity or two. Thank you for being here. Remember, you can send me a note or a poem or another piece of writing you'd like me to consider featuring on an upcoming show. I'm at Tamara Miles SC on Twitter and at TamaraMiles.poet on Facebook. Or you can email me at TamaraMilesSC@gmail.com. This week, my friends and I in the creativity group called That Curious Love of Green have been talking about the shadow self, and it occurred to me that one of the advantages of writing poetry is the ability to explore the shadow self, to allow the speaker of a poem to encounter some aspect of the human experience that the poet may never actually live out or even wish to live out. The poem is a space in which the darkest and most inescapable fears come to light or take a new form that is more approachable. In Thomas More's book, Care of the Soul, he discusses Carl Jung's theory of the shadow, and I'd like to read from that section as a means of introducing this week's poetry readings. He begins, "What I am talking about here is a version of Jung's theory of shadow. For Jung, there are two kinds of shadow. One consists of the possibilities in life that we reject because of certain choices we have made. The person we choose to be, for example, automatically creates a dark double, the person we choose not to be. This compensatory shadow varies from one person to the next. For some people, sex and money are looming shadows, while for others they are simply part of life. Moral purity and responsible living can be shadow aspects to some. Jung also believed there is an absolute shadow, not relative to our life choices and habits. In other words, there is evil in the world and in the human heart. If we don't recognize this, we have a naive attitude that can get us into trouble. Jung thought the soul can benefit by coming to terms with both kinds of shadow, losing some of its naive innocence in the process. In each poem I will share with you today, I believe you'll find a hint of the shadow self, either in direct representation or in metaphor. I'll begin with a poem called Heckle and Jekyll by Frank Lima, published in the November 2015 edition of Poetry. As noted in the introduction, Lima is a Latino American poet who doesn't really care for labels. He was born in Spanish Harlem, and as well as teaching poetry, he became a classically trained French chef and taught at the New York Restaurant School. In this poem, he provides a character sketch based on the two famous cartoon magpies, Heckle and Jekyll, birds in the crow family who are highly intelligent and can recognize themselves in the mirror. Heckle and Jekyll. Crows see us as another invention. Like summer and beauty, they shimmer at sunrise in their new cars, change their names and color when they see us. When they fly, they're the bite marks on the sun and nail scratches of black against the sky. We matter little to them as we are. They prefer hamburger, youth, oxygen, and mineral water. And of course, we sell our souls to a passing crow because we're shiny things they take to heaven. Crows are always polite to humans. They have lots of money and live at a party that never ends. We're the junk jeans they left behind that play Aztec football with our heads when we dream and lose. Crows have relatives everywhere. Human warfare moves across the sky, making more room for them to fly. We're just a meal in the next world. We're the hole in the sky. Crows are legends and instructors of grace. They are the dots in the fog and the flight of the uterus. Crows are the printed warnings of a wasted life. They will never leave or abandon us. When we take our last breath, navigating through our mistakes and lies, the crows will take our last word. We are the last citizens of a pale race of crows, rearranging the furniture in the mind of God. Crows turn the planet on its axis when we die and do nothing to the body we'll remember. Our souls are their meal of the day. And the blue marble in its beak as it flies away is the world leaving you. Following up on that wonderful perspective on crows and human nature, I will offer you a poem of my own that involves a crow. I should say, in order to prepare you, that this poem is written wholly in an Alabama regional dialect. It's called Walking Back. I wrote it last year when I was at Sewanee Writers Conference. Walking Back. Dogtag Crow at the pinnacle says, "Why you gotta throw mean stones?" Says, "My heart's as black as a kettle. He ought not say black as a kettle, nor soft as a woman, because half the women ain't soft, and the other half don't want you poking around to test their mettle. Jazz Jones Squirrel on the wall says you're in love, and not by halves, but whole notes. Says I better play it at tempo, not on a whim. Bullet raccoons on the blacktop say run, run while it's still dark. You know how these gigs go. Says pitch that sharp-edged, half-turned heart in the kudzu, wrapped in a green lace tasseled scarf and hidden in a banjo. Belt notch crow over my shoulder comes back, ha, you're too old anyway to be in love. Says tomcat don't chase, dog too lazy. And the moody pinwheel flips and fits and starts, cause there ain't much wind from below or above. Oh, darling, says a slight breeze, how come you cry? Even a quarter love's enough to get by. What you wanted you had, what you went for's gone. Now dig for the sweeter marrow, closer to the bone. All right, let's have a break for a writing prompt. Grab a pen and paper if you want to participate. I'm going to give you the prompt and then give you a little time to write it down and maybe jot down a few ideas. You might try your response in a variety of forms, poetry, essay, flash fiction, whatever appeals to you. Finish it later and then send your response to me. Here's the prompt. If you were a book, in which section of the bookshop would you be shelved and why? I'll meet you back here for more poetry readings shortly. Let's enjoy some of this music. All right, let me bring you back in and introduce you to a piece of writing by Robert Sexton from his book of poetry and art called All the Way Home, presented to me as a gift years ago. Sexton works with a quill pen and India ink to create each of his drawings one dot at a time. I'm actually going to read from a letter the author wrote while he was in Paris, and he included it in the introduction to the book. I've never been to Paris. How about you? He begins, "For the past several days, I have moved through this splendid city like a man made of vapor. Its sights and sounds and smells and taste have delighted me, and like a balloon I have floated through its quarters, experiencing its wonders with wafting abandon. Happy? Oh yes, I have been happy here. Alive? Yes, for surely no other city so constantly dazzles the human senses. Complete? No, not complete. For I have not been in Paris long enough to love anyone here. And the kind of love I am thinking of requires time. An affair may be spun of light and color and shadow, but the love that lives beneath the surface of the skin is built upon accumulated moments of feeling and experience, and this, by its nature, requires time. And 15 days in the swirl of this city are not enough time to be touched and bound and broken and healed by a single person, as we are with each of the people we truly love." Along with that wonderful piece, I'll share one brief poem of Sexton's entitled "Dans le ciel tout se confond," all things are joined with the sky. A smile is a smile in Paris, as surely as in Cheyenne. Those who travel with an open heart know no foreign land. The stars that shine on San Francisco speckle the nights of Rome, and the sky and the air and the people there are one with the ones back home. Wherever we are in the world, we are at home with ourselves. We are the greatest witness to our own strengths and weaknesses, but at times others will stand up and testify for or against us as well. I wrote the next poem when a friend was facing a witness against her in court, despite being innocent of the charges that were leveled. In a difficult time, she had to draw on her most fierce inner guide, that protector that exists in each of us when our basic dignities are called into question. This poem is entitled, "The Witness Against Me." What does the witness against me know about the powers in my sleep last night, the turn and turning witchcraft of who I am and why? To take before the judge of these whisperings, tantamount to grave diggings, shovel mouths bent to dig at my roots. Meantime, my best witness lives in a foreign country and can only write love letters stamped with hesitancy to be hand-delivered to brutes. Gavel to ground, ear on listen, listen here, all ye witnesses. I was a child who grew under a pagan stone. I am made of lichens. No matter where I've moved, I grow. I choke them out, a tender murdering. Otherwise, they suffer long as spiritual vagrants, wilted in winter, in summer frozen out, laid out on blocks of ice. I eat the marrow of their bones, this warning vow the only playing nice. And in the court, I fly with hawks and catch and eat the mice. We can bear witness against an injustice, and we can also bear witness to beauty. When I was at the Suwannee Writers Conference for 12 incredible days last summer, I had the pleasure of meeting Nathan Spoon and reading his poetry for the first time. Nathan and I went on a morning bird walk along with the famous poets Robert Hass, Sidney Wade, and a handful of other Suwannee contributors. It's a cherished memory. Nathan Spoon is a poet with learning disabilities and ADHD whose poems appear in Oxford, Stanford, Yale, and Durham University publications. He's a 2017 faculty member for the Modernist Social Network Seminar Series at the University of Pennsylvania. And I'd like to read two of Nathan's poems now. He sent these to me under the title Radio Poems. The first poem is called Please. Please don't leave me to paginate the Ozarks alone with a grid that cramps my Byronic manner. Give me your hammer so I can stake my tent hard into these innumerable stars. The The second poem is called A Handful of Jacks. When carrying your house through water, it helps to be water, or failing this, to be air or the root of air. And why shouldn't nonsense be a reasonable launch pad? For failure is a good driver. In the same way, improbability, or is that impossibility, wimples the wings. One's wings in the compression-dilation continuum. After we settled in and you mowed the adjacent field, the bobwhite moved away, as if the open space triggered too many dreams. The clouds, an unbearable décolleté. I'm so lucky to have many remarkably talented friends. Another one is Janet Kozacek. Let me tell you a little bit about her background and about her newest collection of poems. Janet has had an eclectic education, partly in the United States and partly in China. She has degrees in art and biology. She also creates beautiful mosaics, and her poetry seems to blend these skills expertly. Her newest collection, due for publication soon, is called My Women, My Monsters. And in it, she explores various types of female characters who might be called monsters. One of them is called Crow. Crow watches you with eyes you cannot see, black on black against the setting sun, waiting in quiet silhouette upon a branch. Crow seeks you in benevolent predation to feed upon your sorrows and swallow your regrets. Crow finds you alone among the living, lost within memories of departed souls who call and call your name. Crow grasps you in her claws, folded tight around your waist, her black beak cool against your face. Crow knows you when you cross the bridge into that great void and come back home again. Last year, when I was far from home in Ireland and on my own in Cork City, having a little bit of a panic attack before my poetry reading at the Long Valley Bar, I met two kind, smiling people where the poets of Obel meet for weekly readings and competitions upstairs in the bar. They were Mary Ann Smith and Derek Sellen, and I'd love to read for you some poems by each of them. Derek's collection of poems called A Guide to the Spanish Painters is ongoing. He was kind enough to mail me an anthology of poetry sequences called Kaleidoscope that includes some of the Spanish painting poems from 2011. And then he recently shared one of the new poems, so I'll read one of the old and the new one. The first is Dream Caused by the Flight of a Bee Around a Pomegranate, A Second Before Awakening. And it concerns a painting by Salvador Dali with that name. Since I was at the Salvador Dali Museum in St. Petersburg just a few weeks ago, I was happy to find this poem and share it. The madmen I have known, a few, have been of the ordinary kind. Paranoid or obsessive, none of their imaginations has been so excessive that they could have conjured this. On legs like spun extruded sugar, an elephant totters under an obelisk. Tiger leaps from tiger from a fish's jaws under a pomegranate. In 2 seconds from now, the circling bee will have done it, stung the naked sleeping woman who is at double risk from insect and rifle-tip bayonet. A lunatic overworld created out of paint and self-promoting flim-flam of Salvador the showman, Dali the magus. You've seen the act before, the mustache twirled, the eyes goggling hypnotically, and yet, what a dream to wake from, your flesh still warmed by the breath of tigers. The second poem by Derek is The Slave of Velázquez, based on a portrait of Velázquez's slave, whose name was Juan de Pareja. After he was freed from slavery, he worked as an artist himself. And this is The Slave of Velázquez. He saw things. The water seller placing a fig in the glass to freshen it, the smiths hammering out their jealousies in the forge, and worked them into art that holds good. I waited at his side, bound to him by more than legality, learning all the time. A fish scale or a husk of red garlic shone in the same fraternity of light as a king's trimmings. The white of my square-cut collar, the tear in my sleeve at the elbow drew him in. He mixed umbers and ochres and painted ancestral sadness into my eye. Juan de Pareja, the mulatto, born in the shade of the Alhambra, outgazing the Inquisitor. The portrait was my pass into freedom. It spoke of my equality. The same week, he began work on Innocent the Tenth in all his severity. Now, I'd like to share a poem by Marianne Smith. When I asked her to send me something, she sent me this note. "Tamara, I thought you might like to read a poem of mine that links our two countries." And of course I did. This poem was commended in the 2016 Elmet Trust competition for poems written in response to Ted Hughes' poem about Sylvia Plath, The City, and it is called Out of the City. I'm glad you took us out of the city when you did, from all those high roads and brake-shrieking hackney cabs, from route master rumblings, the clack-clack of surface railways, the whine of the underground, an aircraft sighing slowly over the haze of exhaust fumes and chimney smoke hanging above it all. If we had stayed, where would I find my poems now? In the narrow spaces between the tower block and the terrace? In the ranks of identical bicycles slanted by the station? Gaps in the cafe chains or flickers of light in all those heavy-eyed hotels? Instead of knowing the words of birdsong or finding lines in the striations of petals or whispered by trees, I'd read the tags of graffiti or pick up throwaway lines from the gutter, find some iridescence in the oily rainbows arcing across the tarmac. I might trawl fresh ideas from the sameness of the river, pan for gold in light reflected under piers and bridges, find resonance in the church bells and clock chimes, or a rhyme in the iambic pentameter of trains crossing points. I could trace each changing statement of the skyline and rewrite it in a plainer text, block out the shifting silhouettes against the polluted blue of the night sky, then by dawn be the one light still shining, the dying candle I once held out for you." This week, I watched a television series called Fortitude. It was a little too violent for me, but the concept for the show was intriguing because it involved a shaman. I remembered I had a poem about a shaman, so I pulled it out of my files for today. It's called The Summoning Drum. The shaman drums us into trance. Our tired and timid spirits shake and dance, and in a healing space return to ancient names and gods who had their places before our shimmering souls took shape, before shadows traced our human faces and fear and shame shook off our rhythms. Beat by rolling beat we climb, shift the sighing breath of time, and staring inwardly we find a shining name we had surrendered. Brother, sister, lover, friend, transcend circumstances. Though the drum grows silent and the ceremony ends, we hover in the spirit realm, satiated with our shared reunion, and take to ground this sound communion, till through the sheltered ages comes again the sacred summoning drum. Now, I'd like to tell you about South Carolina Poet Laureate, Marjorie Heath Wentworth. She was actually born in Massachusetts, but now lives on Sullivan's Island. Her poems have appeared in numerous books and magazines. She has twice been nominated for the Pushcart Prize. And she teaches poetry as expressions of healing in an arts and healing program for cancer patients. This is something close to my heart because I have also written for a project called Writing Poetry for Cancer. It's a good cause. Check it out online. I'm going to read Marjorie's poem, Distractions, returning to our theme of the shadow self and featuring again the crow. This poem is from a book called Noticing Eden. Distractions. Watching crows from my window today, I miss you. I don't know why these birds remind me of you. Spread out over winter grass, they fill the field oil flowing in every direction. Even the sky seems smothered in a dark smoke of motion. From bare winter branches, they are watching me. Now I know you have come for my heart. When the velvet robe of wings lifts from their bodies in flight, feathers flash bright blue and you are gone. Let's hear now from a journal called Nature Writing. Selene Charles is an educator and writer from the Pacific Northwest. She lives in the Seattle area. Currently, she is working with an editor on her debut novel, Seam Keepers. Recently, Selene shared a month's worth of her poems in the 3030 Project by Tupelo Press. In addition, she's a poetry finalist in the 2017 Literary Contest for Pacific Northwest Writer Association. We're going to hear her poem, Moon Takes the Stage. Moon takes the stage, nestled in snug behind pine-trimmed hills, gaily announcing night. Lake bows in niceties. Majestic moon spills her silver milk glistening atop still waters. Earth responds in awe, mesmerized. August night, spectacular display, gift received. Fullness counting rhythms, seasons march past, corners of time for this very showing. Snowshoe hare applauds such grandeur, as do the bats who clear the air, and I sit and stare in wonder. Let's break again for a writing exercise. Like I did before, I'm going to give you the prompt and then allow a couple of minutes for you to get it written down. Remember, if you want to send something to me, you can find my contact information at my website, tamaramiles.wixsite.com/Sylvia's Daughter Says. The prompt is, remember a time when you broke something. What was it? And what happened as a result? How did you feel? In the last part of today's show, I'd like to share several poems by my friends in the creativity group, That Curious Love of Green, as I did last week. I'll begin with Rasheen, an Irish friend that I had the pleasure of meeting when I was in Dublin last year. And I'm going to read her poem, Fret. In his old house, the ghost of music, his father's father plays a slide. Daddy dances reel with Mammy. Auntie Mary belts a lament. He thinks he sees a tear fall. She pats the net holding iron gray hair, makes her excuses to her lonely bed. Many's the night of music had here until the dawn. Until the final note. You always know it's the final note. The mandolin tired out its strum, and the fiddle fingers weary. Nana reaches for a fisherman's friend. His own fingers seize on the fretboard, yet he cannot stop. He cannot bear it. The eerie silence of a musical family with just one musician left. Next up is Tony F. Irwin's poem, The Secrets I Called Out. Landscape, cold and bleakly silent, holds close the secrets I called out. Not passing along the vibrations, consuming the sound of my voice. A fox, mute and observant, regards me quizzically. Halting mid-pace, she ignores the snow falling. Flakes like apple blossoms. Though birds watch, they hold their songs. Their wings remain at their sides as frozen limbs. I struggle for one deep breath of the cool air I relish. The vixen blinks her recognition and continues her path. She has plans for herself. I examine snowflakes on my cuffs. I turn to see a deep green mountain lake, surrounded by forest, a lone canoe tied at a dock, and a solitary cabin above. I walk out on the dock, looking deep into the water, seeing clear summer water and rounded stones. I sit in the canoe, loosen its safety, take the paddle, cast off. As I glide along, waters deepen and beckon, and I decide to swim. Needing freedom, I leave my clothing and dive in headfirst, feeling the liquid life around me. My long hair escapes its confines, streams behind, and I glide through the water, enjoying the liberty, certain of strength and life. Again, I cast my gaze, and autumn colors excite the sky. Here an elk, wearing his full and lovely crown, stands alone, bugling the song of his tribe, expectant, with amorous intentions commanding his actions. I watch, dressed for frosty days, hoping the moon will rise full and golden to honor the harvest. No nearby female resists his call, and the harem gather, gossiping and queuing for the bull's ministering. They hold the ancient knowledge of the species, and this is the season for life. The dusk conceals the tree's colors, and a light behind the ridge rises to grace all with her light. Each will visit me again, the fox, the water, the moonlit elk. No person emerges, no one but me, introspective and curious. I will greet the moon in every season, look for beauty, solitary but not lonely. I savor the images as they recur, knowing that spring has not yet joined us. Mysteries about the passage of time are concealed, silent within each vignette. The fox feeds her kits, the elk continue their kind, and ever-present water graces that world. Yet as I answer the moon calling me out, I wonder when spring will debut. The next poem is by Wendy Forbes. I met Wendy on a train in Ireland. She's an Australian healer. She's a wonderful person. And I'm pleased to introduce you to her with this poem, The Weaver. Have you ever listened too closely to the weaver as her shuttle swings across the loom, dragging you into the play of a wider life? A melodic theme in the greater symphony. She has reached out, seemingly without looking, seeking a particular color or fabric of soul, grasping what she seeks, and you are drawn in as a thread to the pattern again. Is it better to see the pattern you are part of, to listen to the song and in the swirling movement think you know, or to relax blindly in her hands, to play your part? And now a poem from my friend Kim Smith, who lives in Tennessee. I was able to meet Kim last summer when I was at Suwannee. She's a funny, bright, kind person, and she's writing a novel that I know is going to be wonderful. This poem is called A Harsh Mistress. The black velvet of night wrapped around her, a blanket in the chill. Burrowed under its warmth, she drove on, headlights shining on the road between rocks and a watery place. Her head stuffed with images of who she had been, who she was now. She was not one thing and then magically another. She was not reinvented. What she was, after years of hiding, after years of lying, trying to be other, she was what she had always been, herself, only now discovered. The moon shimmered across the lake, recognizing one of its own. She smiled in the dark, nudged the gas pedal a little closer to the floor, taking the last curve faster than she should, and drove on. Okay, I'd like to feature a reading from Raymond Sillard. Raymond is an independent publisher and radio station guru, as well as a writer in various genres. And I'd like to read from a longer work of his called The Tangled Gate. It's told in various sketches, and I've chosen just one of the sketches to read today. And I think what I'd like to do is add a new sketch each week. This is from sketch number 3. You wonder who let the elixir in, and you look around for a face or office of intent. Look back, far back, now far on beyond your station, the stars in your night skies. You wonder who let the elixir in, and marvel a little at how time and space, how foolish, how funny. Now let it in some more. Look far, look back, beyond your station, your roots, your dreams. You wonder who let the elixir in, as though the plan, its masters, their secret book, its language to master and teach. Stare harder into the fire, grow blinder, listen till you see. You wonder who let the elixir in, as you wander on, want, and what will delight perpetually, a moment's sugared laughing, what will calm the many tongues and their guns, oh, tell how, sing why, by the beg, by the pray, you wonder who let the elixir in, when look, your hand is on the tap, and see it flow. As I said last week, we are all pilgrims. We are also all nomads trying to find our way through the tangled gate. And I'm going to read for you now a poem that I wrote for my daughter called Nomads. If I have time, I'm going to read one more. And then I'm going to call it a day. You can listen to this show as well as the first in the archives section of the radio station. And I'll have a new show in August. Thank you for being with me today. Here's Nomads. In the night sky, Arabs see Al Awaid, the mother camels, a pattern of stars that seem to gather around a calf and protect her from hyenas. In the life before this one, daughter, I might have carried you for just over a year and delivered you to your first slow, searing desert breaths. The camel mare is the only mammal who does not clean her infant after birth, nor bite through the umbilical cord. Another cord binds me to you. It runs from brainstem to lumbar region, with nerve roots, dorsal roots, ventral roots, the peripheral butterfly columns, and the caudal equine, horse's tail. Motor supply for the perineum that brought you into light in late September, a desert sunflower, your eyes dolly blue, to gift me my happiest autumn. A calf is born with eyes open. Did you know camels always face the sun? Their lovely long eyelashes and their tears protect their eyes from sand and grit and blindness. We were nomads in that other life. Maybe that is why I do not see you as much as I would like, but we are bound to each other nonetheless. You'll find me waiting in Al-Awaid, even at the dawn of my next life. Let's have this poem called Ephesus tonight, one show only. This is one of those poems that I wrote using the five words specified in the Obel International Five-Word Poetry Contest. The idea is that you have to use each of the words. And in this case, I came up with the idea of having a sort of revival on the stage. Ephesus tonight, one show only. On stage, where volunteers had strung from the ceiling seven stars, John the Elder swallowed the opening act, first rolled slowly into a scroll, the sweetest spoken word he'd ever tasted. On his tongue a seed grew, watered with potato vodka until a flower of truth had sprouted. And from a seasoned microphone, shrouded by seven shining candles, the prophet shouted lines from Kafka until the whole holy secret was revealed and a seven-trumpeted choir followed. Not a drop of blessed wine was wasted, and after this, not a single sinner doubted. I want to read one called Unnatural. I wrote this for Pride Week. You sound hoarse, said the ear, nose, and throat doctor, as he examined my broken nose, the result of my automobile curling off the road into a concrete culvert around 5 a.m, when I was too sleepy to be driving, and my face hit the steering wheel or maybe the windshield. I don't remember. But the blood flowed until a nice man came out of his house and told me to hold my head back and squeeze my nostrils and try to be calm. And I clutched the hand towel in which the blood had pooled itself into the shape of a small island. But anyway, no, this is my regular voice, I said to the doctor, embarrassed. And at first he would have none of it. Said he'd better take a look, open wide. I was obedient. Wow, he said, you have two exactly matching compressions on your vocal cords. He continued, I guess you're right. I guess this is just the way you were born. Wouldn't it be nice if it could be that way for everybody? If just a quick listen to the vocal cords, just a quick look down your throat could reveal that this is this the way you were born. Friends, I've had such a good time with you today. Before I leave you, I wanted you to hear this piece that Ludovico Unrati performed on the glacier for Greenpeace. It's called Elegy for the Arctic. Oh, it's haunting, isn't it? You can hear the sound of the glaciers falling. Message is clear. Please save the Arctic. Let's be good to the planet and to each other. I'll see you next time. In the dark with a radio spark, meet me where the most light falls. You've been listening to Where the Most Light Falls with DJ Tamara on Spirit Plants Radio, broadcasting around the world at spiritplantsradio.com. Turn on, tune in, and visit us on the web at spiritplantsradio.com for schedules, playlists, archives, and more.